This is the Blind Entrepreneur Podcast, helping millennials execute their vision.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to another episode of the Blind Entrepreneur. I'm your host, Jonathan Grzybowski. I am with David Chen. He's 26 years of age. He's the CEO of Strikingly, which is a website builder that allows anyone to build a mobile optimized website in less than 5 minutes. Strikingly has empowered hundreds and thousands of people to start new ventures. David, thank you so much for being on the show.
Thank you very much for inviting me.
Anytime. So the first question, very simple. Tell us about yourself. Who are you and what is your story?
Sure. That was a brilliant introduction. I wouldn't have done better. So my name is David. I started Strikingly, and this is actually our second kind of startup. Our first startup actually didn't take off, and then we pivoted into Strikingly, which I can talk about more. I studied at University of Chicago. My major was economics, and technology startup just was so much more interesting than banking. So I found that was my true kind of passion. Just dive in with two of my co-founders. I guess in short, that's the things that I've been through.
Very cool. So you're talking about how your true passion became a startup. Was that something that you had very on at an early age in life?
No, actually, I mean, this is something that I never thought of, to be honest. I'm Asian. I came from a very kind of I wouldn't say completely traditional, but very Asian-minded family. Mm. My parents really wanted me to go into banking, particularly Wall Street investment banking, right? And that was my dream as well. So I really love econ. I did my econ at UChicago, which is, a major that has 80% of the people who study that major go to banking. And I was really interested in that. So I try out. I did an internship at a bank called Goldman Sachs, and I was there for a few months. And what I realized was that, it was really interesting work, but it could be my hobby, but not something that I would be passionate into doing for long term. And because of that, I know I wouldn't be doing a great job in this this industry, because I wasn't, really having the kind of 100% buy-in to this industry. So, at the same time, one thing that really was something that kind of my side project was this nonprofit that I was working on with a couple of my friends from UChicago, which is doing great right now. It's called Money Think. It's a nonprofit that kind of spreads financial literacy to the urban youth, particularly the people who never have any concept of even saving account or budgeting for their future. So we taught a lot of high school students things that we learn in our classes, and things that were just common sense. That took off quite quickly. So we started with one school in the south side of Chicago, and then quickly grew to a few more schools, because the school principals were just so impressed with the results we were able to achieve. People are all of a sudden coming back to school. They will attend classes instead of completely drop off. Mm. Their grades improved, and some of them actually started applying for college. A lot of them didn't. So that was really impressive. So the words got spread out, and we started scale up the operation a little bit. It was just four of us in the beginning, doing this financial literacy training, one-off classes. But then all of a sudden, we have so much demand that we actually had to build an organization around it. We have to actually recruit people from campus. We have to actually build up the curriculum, the system of training and stuff. And all of those set the foundation of entrepreneurship. Even though it was different from a tech entrepreneurship, it was just so much more interesting. The fact that we can deliver value to people that we do care about, in a very direct sense as well. At the same time, we're building something that's completely new. Nobody have tried it. Nobody have actually done things the way that we are doing it. And apparently we're doing a pretty good job as well. And all of those encourage us to really just pursue that further. So starting from that nonprofit, that was like kind of my crash course in entrepreneurship. And I just realized that that's something that I'm much more passionate. When I was in banking, more of what I was thinking about and trying to do was this, like, you know, after work, I'm going to actually work on this nonprofit. And that was just very interesting. So it became very apparent as I tried banking and also trying entrepreneurship, you sort of stumble upon your true passion.
So when you were, how old were you when you started the nonprofit again?
That was my first year in college. So I guess 19.
Nice.
Yeah.
So, you know, you're in your internship. When did that light bulb come out off? When did that light bulb go out and just say, "Holy crap, I need to get out of here"? Was there a specific day that you could remember?
Well, actually, for that particular case, not really a specific date, but I can actually remember quite a few incidents. First of all, my internship was it was Goldman, so it's awesome. I mean, the right. company is fantastic, and everyone around there was just like so smart. And you're just like, wow. I mean, I thought I was smart, but all of a sudden, everyone is like way smarter than I am. So that was very interesting. But you know, first of all, like every single day, I would be, you know, my hours was something like 5:30 in the morning. I need to wake up and get there at 6. I was like just crunch time at 6, from 6 to like 8-ish. And then, I usually, since I was an intern, I basically do everything. And I usually got home around 12 at night. And then, you know, that was like kind of a, I don't know how many hours was that. But like that was just a long
6 in the morning to 12 at night?
Yeah, like that was my hours. And I mean, that didn't bother me that much. The fact is that every single day I got back home, I have to watch 1 hour of MTV to make sure that I don't even think about anything. I don't need to ask the question, why am I here? What am I doing? What did I do today?
As long as
it
wasn't the Kardashians.
I need the 1 hour of MTV. I remember just playing the same song every day. So I watched that MTV channel every night to make sure that I can actually, you know, clear out all of my thoughts and actually able to go to sleep. And that was weird because it didn't happen to me before. I mean, when I was in college, I also worked really hard with like nonprofit and all of the classes I was taking. I never felt that I can't fall asleep. Mm-hmm. I was like, okay, this is weird. Starting from there, I started kind of like trying to answer a lot of questions I had in mind. So I started going off to like talk to the managing directors, the partners of the company. And I asked them the question of like, you know, why are you here? What's next for you? What's your goal? Well, you know, why did you decide to come to Goldman instead of other places? The fact is that I never heard one answer that was compelling. Mm. And in fact, a lot of them was very surprised with the fact that I was asking all of these questions. Mm. So, and my HR actually came to me one day, was like, you know, I mean, off the record, well, I guess I'm putting on the record right now, but like, you know, like you're one of the most problematic kids I've ever met in my entire career. I was like, okay, I guess that's a compliment.
Yeah, thanks, I guess.
But that was just different. And everyone around me was trying to change the way I was thinking. Hmm. There's many more specifics, but, my media superior was like telling me about, you know, you've been trying to do this one thing for like the entire internship, which is this one person, one of my manager, somehow just didn't like me. And I don't know why, but she
seems
like
a nice guy. I don't know why somebody wouldn't like you.
I don't know. she never even talked to me. It was like to a point that I was like, I would be saying her name and then she would just completely ignore me. And she was supposed to be my mentor at the company.
Interesting.
And so and my immediate superior was telling me, you know what, like, you know, it's just like pursuing a girl. She said like no to you like 70 times already. Mm-hmm. Why do you persist? And you're just completely wasting your time. She's of no value to you. She can't help you get promoted. She can't really help you with your career. Why would you like spend so much time with this person? And that was really weird for me because, like, you know, throughout my entire kind of like, you know, life in a sense, you know, how I did the startup, it's like, if it's more difficult, I would just have more willingness to crack it. But that was just different. In the banking industry, you have to be very efficient. You have to be very, very, like, you know, ruthless in things. You have to be just really, you have to love money as well. But none of those was something that I was built for. A few of my friends were really, really good at it, but I wasn't. I knew that I would just be suffering. I can do a fantastic job if I guess, put in, like, you know, just like that long hours every day, but it's just not going to be sustainable. And I will hit the plateau very fast. So I knew that that wasn't for me, you know, throughout all of those. It was much more of a build-up process.
So let's transition it. And how did you get into Strikingly? Because you had this experience through banking. You had this mindset of what you know what you like and what you're good at and what you're not good at. How did that that mentality and the things that you learned from banking transition into Strikingly?
Sure. So with banking, I knew that what I'm not good at, I guess, but I haven't really found what I'm good at. I knew a little bit of what I'm passionate about, but not something, I wouldn't say I was good at it at that time, but it sort of just went with it, right? So I remember, well, Strikingly actually, as I said, it was like, it's a pivoted kind of a startup from the first one that didn't actually take off. So the first one was really kind of our first attempt and where I actually got introduced to the tech entrepreneurship. So I was in Singapore at that time for a conference after my banking internship. I was there and I remember the Singapore government was talking about something like they're going to infuse $40 million to boost up the entrepreneurial environment in mm-hmm. Singapore. And in my mind, it just says like, that doesn't make sense because, like, you know, it doesn't really change the fundamentals. You know, the money is going to be dumped in and then it's going to be kind of like, you know, a few people take it and then it's gone. I mean, it doesn't change the fundamental infrastructure of how, you know, how to make it easier for people to do startup or what you can do to empower them. So that was what I was thinking. I was like, you know what? I was a VP of student government at UChicago. And I was in charge of like student organization funding. So basically, we give out something like $1.5 million of funding every year to student organizations, and we never had enough. And in my mind, I was just like, wait. Every single organization has something like 30 to 40 people. If each one of them chipping like $10, let's say, it would be enough for them to do almost anything they come to us for. So why don't we just build that? So we built a crowdfunding platform back in 2010. That was before Kickstarter and Indiegogo really, you know, took off. Mm. So there was no concept of crowdfunding at that time yet. So we started with like, we're just like, well, let's just build something that people can actually do fundraising themselves. That's all of the concept. And we started with that. We kind of built that into the process of applying for funding at on our campus for student funding with the hope of like these people were actually transitioning to doing this crowdfunding themselves with like the organizations. But that never happened. The people came to the platform, they got the money from the school, they applied for it, but they never really came back for the crowdfunding feature. And we were really surprised with the fact. So, I mean, back then, it was our first startup, so we made tons of mistakes. Mm-hmm. Part of it was that we never talked to the users. We sort of just like, crowdfunding, right? Like, you go with it, this is like the next NASDAQ, right? Like, we're just going to revolutionize everything. You sort of start from that top-down way of thinking. But then we didn't really get down to the fundamental problem. We actually never really asked what's the problem, you know, or is there a problem at all. So after like about 8-9 months into the startup with like some initial traction with like, you know, basically forcing people to use the platform for school funding, we started talking to users. We asked them, why would you not come back to use the, you know, the crowdfunding feature? Like, what could we have done to help you, you know, use that feature more? Is there just not good enough? Something that we could do more? The answer was really surprising. The answer was that we don't need crowdfunding. We don't need funding, in fact. I was like, what? I mean, first of all, you came to this platform because of funding. And also, I mean, you knew that you always like come to the student organize, like the our funding committee for more funding. What do you mean by you don't need funding? The answer was very straight up. It's like, because the funding existed. That's why we want to have an event to apply for it. Not because we have an event and we need a funding to support that. So it's completely backward. Mm-hmm. And there's no reason why they shouldn't apply for the funding, because it's just easy money, and then help them, you know, do something that ideally they can put on their resume and learn something new. So we're like completely shocked, and this is consistent from all of the people I've talked to. And we're like, okay, so I guess the platform just doesn't have any value to you. But their answer was also surprising to us, which is, you know, actually I found the platform to be very valuable. If you can actually improve the design of the profile page, that would be fantastic. Hmm. I was like, why? Why would you want that? I was like, oh, well, I mean, we always have student organizations or events we want to promote or just running for student government. I need somewhere that I can actually put all of those information on. I can rally people behind it, and people will know that it's legitimate. Mm. They know that I actually have a branding on the internet. I can send them a link, right? That's something that, you know, I wanted to do, but like a Facebook page is just too crowded and noisy. People get like, you know, all of these other things going on. So I want that profile page to be great. I was like, okay, so how do you envision that to be? And I asked them to send me examples of what they think a great profile page can look like, and all they sent us was websites. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, okay, so that's what you really need, which is a easy presentation or easy presence on the internet that you can actually show that this is your branding, this is who you are, this is your identity. And went ahead to build a landing page, you know, like the ones they sent to us. We just built that landing page, which is a single page website. We launched it, and then we have like a sign up box at the bottom telling them, if you want to build something just like this, sign up. We didn't even know how to call it. We didn't know it was a website builder, a slider, a single pager, a scroller, I don't know. But we're just like, okay, if you want to build something like what you're looking at right now, sign up. And we didn't write a line of code. Really, we just did nothing. It was completely different from the way that we did the first startup. We didn't write a line of code. We wrote out this, you know, landing page with the promise that we're working on something. In fact, we're just testing out the market. And in 1.5 weeks, we had something like 800 or 1,000 signups.
Wow.
With doing nothing on the actual product. And that was a strong validation that there's a demand. People will sign up for something that they don't even know what it is. And that's when we know that you have to start from a problem. And I guess that's our kind of like story of like how we got into Strikme. I mean, it was a lot of difficulties afterward to actually get to the right solution for it. But, you know, it's just, you know, to figure out the problem was just like a solid foundation, a solid kind of anchor point for anything that we talk about in the future.
That's interesting. So I think asking questions is very important. Now, what technique did you use in order to ask those people within the crowdfunding website in order to get their feedback? Was it just an email? Was it through Facebook? Or?
Yeah, I mean, there's really not that much of a technique. The one technique I would actually say is don't use technique. It's just like keep it open. Let them talk. You hear them talk. You know, one thing is that one concept that we have been continuously talking about this inside the team and also to people who are building products, that you can't expect the people that you're talking to make a decision of what you need to do. You have to collect all of the information and data points so that you can make a decision on what to do, not them. So when they come to you with a solution, you can't just stop there. But like, okay, great, they made a decision. This is a solution. This is something they need. Let's just build that. That doesn't work. You have to actually go down to why. Why would you want that? You know, what exactly do you need to use this for, right? Why would you really want to have this particular feature? Is there any other ways that you can do the same thing? Have you actually been using other ways to do the same thing? All of those will reveal much more. And the way that you interview users is really you have to think from their perspective and really stay in their shoes, which is just, you know, give them an open-ended question and have them talk. And then you extrapolate, you know, things that you need or valuable information. And, you know, after you talk to many of them, you will know which one of those points are consistent across everyone. Now, obviously for us, you know, we started with like, you know, quite a targeted group of people who have similar kind of background, and that's valuable. And one way to do it, you know, I guess a hack that you can put on to collect the right audience you can go after is really something like building a landing page and just collect signups, like what we did basically. Well, which is something that you can actually use Strikingly to do right now. That's something that you can totally do. You know, very easily collect some signups, and then now you have a very targeted audience that you can go after for any questions. And all you need to do right now is just give them very open-ended questions and hear their problems instead of trying to get to the solution. And one thing that definitely you shouldn't do is to kind of probe them with the suggested solution that you have in mind. So don't tell them, hey, what do you think about this solution? And that usually doesn't work. I can give you a very specific example, which is one of our friends who run a startup before, they did this like market survey, which is they had this one product before, which is a kind of, you know, during the birthdays, you can send a birthday cards to people. It's really outdated, 1990s kind of like product, very ugly as well. So what they did was that they revamped it. There was a lot of people used that product, first of all. I mean, it was a popular product. Tons of people, millions of people used it. So they were like, oh, wow, if millions of people use that one, I can build a very fancy one, much more kind of a, you know, beautiful one, and then I can actually have more people using it. That was a hypothesis, right? So they went out, and one thing they did was like, okay, you know, do you want to try out this product? Like, would you actually use this product? They presented the product, actually. It was that specific. They presented the product, asked them to try out. And people were like, wow, yeah, great. I'll definitely use it. But what they did right afterward was like, okay, so I mean, I'm sure that you have some Facebook friends who have a birthday today. Why don't you just use it to send them some, you know, birthday cards right now? And the response was like, well, I'll probably do that later. And that's when you know, like, there's not a real demand. So you have to keep it as open as possible. And if you do present something that as an actual solution, you have to validate it to the point, like my friends did. There are many ways to do it. Like, would they actually pay for it? Would they actually sign up? Like, give you an email address? That's a very clear validation. Would they actually want to, start pushing it to their organization if it's an enterprise product that, you know, they can get more people to sign up? Would they refer? But stuff like that, if you present them a specific solution, you have to get that, which, you know, you can do, like what I said, with a landing page. But, you know, the groundwork is still keep it open, try to understand their problem. Don't try to get to the solution. Don't try to validate your idea. Try to validate the problem your idea is solving.
Mm. So fast forward a little bit. Now, you know, you guys are much, you're not like a typical startup with just a couple of employees. You have 40 plus employees now. You've been around for quite some time. You know, what has been your biggest failure as now a leader within your organization?
Yeah, that's a great question. Well, I continue to make mistakes, and we did a self review towards the end of last year. And one of the questions was like, you know, how do you out of 1 to 10, what's your leadership? You know, how would you rate your leadership? And I gave myself a 2.5. That was like how badly I thought I did. And it's just continuously something that you think is the case. Managing, you know, leading a team of like three of us or me myself is very different from leading a team of like 5 to 10. And it's very different. 5 to 10 is very different from 20. 20 is very different from like right now 40 or 40 plus. Yeah, every single stage, I feel like there was a big kind of a plateau and big bottleneck of like, you know, how to get to the next stage. And it was much more from myself, you know, the way I think, the way I did things before. It was much more of that bottleneck that prevents the team from moving forward. Fortunately, you know, that there's a specific day for that, actually, for when I got the epiphany that I can actually get to the next level, which is January 17th. Sort of everything just like came together. I don't know
this
how.
Year.
This year. And all of a sudden, I knew that I can actually, you know, take the team to a completely new level. So I guess, you know, the biggest value was really leadership. And when I break down leadership, I think one of the very, very important thing, and this is the first thing after I had that epiphany that I did, was having a very clear vision. That's something that nobody else in the company would be able to do, not because they're not capable, but because they're not in the position to do it.
Mm-hmm.
As a CEO, you are uniquely positioned to do something like this. You have to do it. I mean, it's a very heavy responsibility and might actually imply a lot of consequences, which is like you might actually lead the team completely to a different, to a wrong direction or mm-hmm. something that's like not right. But you have to, you know, swallow that. You have to have the gut to stand up to it, be like, hey, I believe in it. This is something that, you know, you guys just need, I will convince you guys, these are all the logics. And if you have any question, you talk to me. But if it fell, it's on me. Mm-hmm. And like that's something that I wasn't able to say before. And with that, I sort of relying on crowdsourcing, and I still do. I mean, I was relying on crowdsourcing decisions from people. That's not something that you should be doing as a leader. What you should do is that you should hear all of the suggestions, their feedback. But for decisions like this on the vision level, you have to stand up to actually lead up the team, which is something I didn't do. So that clarity was just never in the team. Everyone would have a slightly different version of like, you know, what they think the vision of the company is. And that slight differences lead to completely different kind of like directions and misalignment and mm-hmm. introduce a tons of communication problem, tons of like, you know, misalignment of like, you know, prioritization and stuff. So the number one thing that I did, which I didn't do as much before, was like having a clear written down document that's like for what is our vision and what is our goal for this year that aligns with that vision. And you know, and also work out with like the different team leads to boil that, you know, yearly goal, which already aligned with the vision, boil that down to something that they can work on this quarter and you know, this maybe this month, and then have them take full charge, and I would just be like completely hands off with the micromanagement. So so that's what I did, and I think, you know, so far we're only about two months in just since the epiphany, and you know, we have implemented a lot of changes, and so far it just seems like it has been tremendously valuable mm-hmm. for the team. And then we've been able to move so much faster with that clarity, with that clear vision. So one way or the other, I mean, you have to make a decision.
Yeah.
You know, even if you're wrong, you have to make that decision and move fast to prove that you're wrong
and stand by
and
it
it's
too.
Fine. Yeah, and you just like kind of move on. If it's wrong, you just move on. Let's move to another direction until we hit it, until we get to the right destination. And that's something that as a leader, you just have to have the gut and the clarity that you can infuse the team to be able to mobilize everyone to do it. And I wasn't able to do that one thing. So the lack of clarity was entirely on my shoulder, and I made a huge mistake by not, you know, resolving this earlier on. I probably wouldn't be able to until recently either. But that's something that I wish that we could have done much earlier.
So I want to learn a little bit more about the person up here. You know, you right now you're currently where again?
I'm in Shanghai.
In Shanghai. So you're currently in Shanghai, and so you're traveling, I'm sure. Are you traveling a lot nowadays?
Well, quite a lot, actually.
So how do you stay mentally fit? I mean, you're leading a team, you're the head of an organization, you're constantly making decisions, whether they're right or wrong. You know, what are some things that you do that you could, you know, tell other people to model after?
Sure. I watch Friends a lot.
Nice.
That's my favorite TV
I totally
show.
Would. I did not expect you to say that at all. That's awesome.
But that's a great show and helps me relax a lot. And you have to relax a little bit.
Sure.
your anxiety level would totally translate down to the team. So you have to enjoy it. And it's not a technique. You just have to enjoy it, genuinely enjoy it. Mm-hmm. Mental level, you have to like kind of block out time, relax, rest, set out a time that you don't do work. As a leader of the team or the founder, you have to you sort of feel that you have to do work all the time, like 24/7. But that's not something that you can actually continue doing down the line. I mean, even at a very very early stage, we block out when there was only three of us in this like, small apartment where we sleep on the same bed. Like that was like that time of like crunch time. We still block out one day, like Sunday, just don't do work. Let's play like Warcraft, or let's go out hiking, or let's run, let's exercise, whatever. So that's something that I totally think that somebody should do. Exercise help a lot. Do things you like, basically. I like watching Friends. I like watching movies. I love House of Cards. So things
nice.
Like that.
What episode are you on?
I finished.
Nice.
I finished every time. So yeah, those are the things. I mean, another thing is like, another thing that I started to do recently, again, it ties back to what I just said, is that you have to make decisions quickly. You have to somehow get to a point that you can make quick decisions and swallow the consequences if must be, but you have to make decisions quickly. If things like stay in your mind for too long, it will drive you nuts. Mm-hmm. You always have so much going on. So you have to actually, get something done and then move on to do another thing and just see the consequences, see the results, and then, kind of react to it afterwards. But, the one thing that you shouldn't do is, don't make decisions. And that will really mess up your mentality. And that happened to us again, like over and over. And sometimes you have to make the unpopular decisions as well. And you just have to do the sales to actually convince everyone to be on board or convince everyone of your vision. And that's something I don't do a lot, but sometimes you have to. But even in that kind of acute situation, you have to actually be able to make the decision and just move on. Your job is continuously lead the team to move forward. So I did that a lot. I mean, I sort of like told myself mentally of like, don't have more than like two or three things going on at the same time that I need to work on. Everything that came to me, I sort of just block the time and finish it up before I move on to the next thing. So I'll say that really helped you with your mental health a lot because you really can't have a clear line between your work and life. So it's better to actually make all the decisions and get something to a point that you can actually just leave it there, wait for the feedback to kick in, wait for the results to come in, and then you just go enjoy your life a little bit. And I feel like that's just very, very valuable. And obviously, one other point that's so obvious is having great co-founders, having great friends help a lot. You always have some time that you're down. So don't think about yourself as like Iron Man or Superman that you just like, with a steel mind. You can't. You will feel down sometimes. Situation happens, family, girlfriends, boyfriends, I don't know. It just, things happen all the time. So you need somebody who can pick you up. I'm fortunate enough to have like two great, fantastic co-founders and a fantastic team that when I'm down, that they will be up to like pick me up. So be around, surround yourself with great people, people you can trust, not just people who are super capable, but people who are not, not a douche, not somebody who you just don't want to be around with. But you have to somehow because they can code or sell. That doesn't make sense to me. And that never makes sense to me. So I recommend you surround yourself with like fantastic people. I did that. And with that, I mean, sometimes I feel really down. I walk into the office, immediately I feel this sense of relief because I know that this great group of people I'm working with, we can actually make something work. Don't worry. Just don't worry too much. Yeah.
Great. That's a great piece of advice, and I couldn't agree more with you. So I just have two very quick questions. The first one is, when you were back in your banking days, you mentioned that when you were talking and asking questions, a lot of people tried to challenge the way that you think.
Yeah.
And you kind of coined that, a lot of people thought that you were weird because you were asking all these different questions. Were you always that way when you were you always thinking differently than most? And you know, was that something that you that your family brought on to you? Or was it more so just like, you know, was that an attribute that your family had? Like, do you take that from your family, or is that just something that you just innately have within yourself?
I haven't thought about that much, but I would say the environment definitely, you know, help a lot. And one thing that I would definitely attribute to that is diversity. You know, the diverse group of people that you met and diverse environment that you have been to, those will give you a different perspective, and that's a foundation for critical thinking. You know, when talking about my family is a very traditional Chinese family.
Are any
still.
Of them entrepreneurial?
I'm sorry?
Are any of them entrepreneurial?
My father is. My father is quite entrepreneurial, gotcha. But it's much more in the traditional industry, right? You know, business. Talking about like building up small businesses, operationally sound and stuff. He taught me a lot. He taught me to actually think beyond, but he was actually the person who always advocate me to go into banking the most, because mm-hmm. he knew how hard entrepreneurship is. Mm-hmm. And as a parent, you just don't want your kids to go through that. But that's exactly what I wanted to go through, I guess. So I jump into that path. So so I wouldn't say they, you know, I wouldn't say it's one particular kind of environment that helped me with that. I moved to the U.S. when I was like 15. And then the environment is just completely different, mm-hmm. right? I mean, I was, you know, before when I was in China, all I need to care about is getting like straight, you know, A's, or not only straight A's, just like first place in every single classes I take. And that's it. You know that things will actually just work out. That's kind of like, you know, the educational system in China. And then in the US, all of a sudden, I was like, nobody knows how good I did in class. They probably know that I got a straight A, but like, it's not like, oh, I got 100 again in like in all of my tests. So I was a nerd. I was a huge nerd. But then, you know, that that environment started to like shape me to go to a slightly different direction. I started doing sports that I didn't do before. I started doing like, I was in a Christian school, which I was, you know, I wasn't, you know, I wasn't religious before. And I was in a Christian school. I have to study Bible. And I have to go to churches. So that's very different. And then when I go to UChicago, it was so liberal. I mean, UChicago is just one of those, I guess, most liberal place. Every you know, every dinner that we sit down, we'll be talking about Hegel or Marx. Mm-hmm. It's rarely an environment I see anywhere else. But in UChicago, it just like, took it to a completely different level of critical thinking. It's like criticizing almost everything. It's like, oh, yeah, I'm going to do a banking internship. And all of my friends would be like, why? Why would you do that? Why would you, you know, is this something that you truly want to do? I mean, it's just not something that, you know, a lot of people will do as your friend. It's like all of those unpopular and tough questions. People will probably just congratulate you and be like, oh, you're awesome, you're great. But my friends were not that. They will actually challenge me for almost every single decision I made. When this my startup, one of my friends actually came up to me, told me that David, you know, I trust you 100%, but I just think that you're making the biggest mistake in your life, mm-hmm. and that's like, you know, that's a sign of a great friend. He's willing to actually say those unpopular things to just help you, you know, cover your blind spot. And I was fortunate to have a group of friends who are like that. And the classes that the very liberal, you know, very liberal art kind of education at UChicago definitely help a lot. So I guess all of those come together shape how I start thinking. I wouldn't say it's, you know, one thing in particular. The education, the environment, the diversity definitely help a lot.
Nice. Last question. Very simple.
Yeah.
Imagine that you just had the worst day of your life and you're at home. Maybe you're watching Friends, relaxing a little bit.
Most likely.
Most likely. Yeah. What is that one item of food or meal that you're going to eat to make your spirits and your day better?
Oh, so easy. Burritos.
Nice.
From Chipotle.
What's in the Chipotle? I gotta know what's in the Chipotle burrito. What are we ordering?
I don't know. I just like they have something special going on with like with that Chipotle burritos, man. You just I don't know every. I whenever I flew back to US, the first thing right after I get off the airport is drive straight to Chipotle to get a burrito.
So are you doing the tricks where you're getting double beans and double meat and fajitas, or are you just
everything? You just ask them like everything. Like, that's this is very easy. Everything with like guacamole. That's
nice.
It. For that long, I'm good for the day.
There you go, David. Thank you so much for your time. If you could just tell everybody, you know, how to follow your journey and be a part of your mission and your vision in life.
Wow, okay, I have a very smart answer for that. Actually, you know, one thing that we did was strike me was that we, from very early on, still a tradition, is that when once you sign up to strike me, immediately you will receive a, not immediately, like, you know, about 10 minutes later, you will receive an email, and that email is from me. Mm. We still do that, and I still read all of those emails. I mean, I might not reply to all of them, but I still reply to all of them. So that would be the easiest way to get in touch. And then obviously you can try to find me on Twitter. Handle is Haisha Chen, HaishaChen. I just, you know, always give us feedback. We always welcome any feedback or suggestion to make the product better.
Awesome. David, you're an amazing person. Thank you so much for your time. Congratulations on your success. And until next time, my friend.
Definitely. Thank you.
Talk to you soon.
Bye.